Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Authentic Ibiza Tribe, here with me, Sadie Mills. I'm so excited to have you back again listening in. Thank you for coming. I know you could be doing anything, listening to anyone, or basically just doing anything you want, but here you are. You might be lying on a beach, you lucky buggers if you are. And I'm so happy that you've decided to listen to another episode. This is number 7 of a 12-part series. I'm very excited and absolutely loving doing this experience. I'm getting such great feedback from everybody. So this week we've got another very beautiful man. Thank you for that. I know that there's lots of ladies coming in. So a lot of people have asked for more guys. So we've got a guy that I've known for a few years now and one that's close to my heart. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce him now. So welcome, Aaron Ashley.
Hi, Sadie. Thanks so much for having me on, actually. It's been a long time coming and looking forward to...
Well, we were going to have you on last week, weren't we? And then you had come down with the awful pre-summer cold.
Man flu, post-marathon running as well.
Well done on your marathon.
Thank you very much.
Your first one here in Ibiza. We've had the Ibiza Marathon for 5 years now, is it?
Yeah.
Sixth one? We had COVID in between, so they obviously had those years taken away. But it's a grueling marathon. You've done really well to do that because it's not all flat like the London. It's quite a few hills in there, isn't there?
No, I'll be very honest. It was pretty brutal. First sort of 26 kilometres pretty much uphill, then dealing with the heat.
As you can hear, Aaron is a man who loves to do his fitness and sport. This is his first ever marathon, and we're very excited that he's finished that and completed it. So well bloody done. You've got a really good time too. But let's go back a little bit. Tell us who you are. Who are you, Aaron?
So, yeah, I'm Aaron Ashley, born in 1985 in the county of Buckinghamshire in the UK and a town called High Wycombe. So I grew up there till I was around 20. I think I moved out and moved up into London and then came over to Ibiza in, I think, the first time I was 17, 2002.
On a lad's holiday, probably.
Proper lad's holiday. San Antonio. There was eight of us in total, and three of the lads had been previously to Ibiza and actually tried to do a bit of a season, but very different to the club season that these guys did. They sort of just went up into the West End and, you know, just working around the bars and PRing, and they weren't so much of the sort of clubbing calibre.
Where, but back then, that's what you did, because this would have been what year?
This was 2002, so they were coming, I think, from 2000, 2001 maybe, because they'd done a couple of seasons, and that's what really sort of spurred me on. I just heard all these stories, they'd come back September, and our group were already sort of big into our sort of clubbing, but more... We were all originally junglists and drum and bass boys. That era was so big for us.
And a little birdie tells me that you actually used to be a garage MC or a drum and
bass
MC.
Well, drum and bass, yes. Someone's told you quite rightly, yes.
And is that, was that after then? Or were you already sort of toying with that? Did that inspire you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, saying that, pre-rave, I was, listening to all these tape packs and just started, probably my teachers were thinking, oh God, what is he daydreaming at the back? And I just remember all my geography books all just having riddles and rhymes all through the back of them. I did start pre-rave, but then when I heard them live and in these, in these venues, I just went, oh my God, this is like the next level.
I want to be them.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do. And were you getting paid for doing that, or was it more that you just went along and...
Well, I'll cut a long story short, but so basically went and I could not start writing rhymes, rhythms, and literally my parents must have thought, what is going on up there? Just having stereos loud, just chatting rubbish down a microphone and trying to, just trying to get in a really
just
good
practice.
Rhythm. Yeah, just practicing. And then a friend of ours started up a little local night. We ended up doing a few local sort of raves in spaces. And then we ended up doing the Matrix in Reading, if anyone ever heard of that. Anyway, it was quite a big club. They put on a bit of an old school and drum and bass night, and then eventually did one up in the Rex in Stratford for One Nation up and coming stars, and then that was sadly it. There was I went to a drum and bass party in, when was it? The end of, it was about 2 years after I'd really got into it, and it was just the attitude in the drum and bass world. And it was actually on New Year's Day, and there was lots of fights breaking out and lots of crews clashing. And I thought, this isn't what the music, this is not now about the music. This is now about what areas you came from. And we were getting in quite into this London crowd. So anyway, I sort of then had a bit of a doubt in my mind.
And that's when you came to Ibiza and you chose the happy side of things.
Absolutely. So then this was my next sort of life-changing experience, was friends of ours had come to Ibiza that summer. Anyway, so I went away and they're telling me all about how amazing these, you know, just how amazing the parties are, how amazing the people are. And, you know, obviously the sun shining, and it was all these just incredible. I'm thinking, oh,
I want a bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2002, we all took the plunge, came over on this lad's holiday to Tropical, booked a 2 week holiday.
Like a package thing, I suppose, yeah. Back then, like an 1830 type thing.
Absolutely.
Flights and accommodation included, chips.
And then the rep coming with the, you know, with a gun with vodka in it squirting in your mouth at 8 o'clock in the morning, that type of holiday.
I was a club 1830 rep, so I know exactly. Not here in Ibiza, in the Canaries. So I know exactly how they used to behave.
So yeah, that was a bit surreal for me, because I'd been not really been on many sort of holidays like that. I'd start, you know, obviously been away with my parents, and I had a friend come away, and then this was my first lad's holiday. So didn't really know what to expect. Obviously chose Ibiza through friends of ours.
And they'd done the more bars in the West End and stuff, you said. Did you venture out into any of the big clubs and stuff then for that week?
Well, yeah, we did. So I was a bit of the ringleader for the sort of, you know, the club side of it. So my dad used to be a printer, and he used to print all the Twice of Nice flyers, all the garage raves. So he was actually speaking to a guy called Alfredo Alfi, who still lives here now, who I haven't spoken to for ages.
I know Alfredo very well.
Yeah, so he was my dad said, you must get in contact with Alfredo because he'll be able to get you into all these clubs. So anyway, I think it was the second night.
Thanks, Dad. That's a good tip.
So I was already the lads going, oh, go on then, right, well, let's, you know, sort out, let's get some guest list, let's get this. And at that point, we were still into the, you know, still into drum and bass, but I just wasn't into the rave scene in the UK. So I went to there was a night called Deja Vu at Es Paradis.
Was Twice as Nice still on then as well?
Twice as Nice was at Eden, I think. But he was also involved in, so it was part of the Helter Skelter. They did a Deja Vu over here. And anyway, there was Slipmat and the Rat Pack, you know, that sort of old school rather than drum and bass. So, because we were quite jump up front boys. But anyway, so it was the closest we were going to get. So anyway, there's me going, I hadn't even spoken to Alfredo. I thought, I'm just going to go chance it up at the door, because there was quite a big queue outside. So I'd obviously had quite a few drinks in the West End for however many euros it was to, you know, for unlimited vodka Red Bull.
What, you got vodka?
Yeah, that's it.
You don't care when you're 17.
That's it. Feeling a bit ballsy, went right up to the front of the queue and said, oh, I've got a meeting with Alfredo. He said to meet him here at midnight. Is he here yet? And the guy goes, who are you? And I said, oh, Aaron Ashley. So anyway, the guy goes, all right, well, you might as well come in, wait here. So all the boys are going, he's only gone and done it.
Brilliant. He who dares wins.
Exactly. So anyway, I remember just walking into Es Paradis, which, I mean, you know, is a beautiful club. And I just remember walking down the stairs, then having to pretend to wait at this bar for Alfredo, who I wasn't actually even meeting. And then by that point, the guys had all paid to get in or whatever. They're like, how did you do that? I just said, I don't know, it just sort of came on me. So anyway, we ended up having a great night in there, busy night, and just thinking, oh, wow. And then the next night we got told about going down to Café du Mar and doing the sunset. Because I didn't do that much research before I came. I just, you know, obviously heard some stories from friends.
Or pre-internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or just about internet, but we didn't use it like we use it now.
No, and I remember seeing actual old photographs. I remember my mate Alex coming, he did the first season actually, and his sister used to come out as well, so he'd got it from her, and then she was good friends with like Alex P, Brandon Brock, that sort of era. So then he obviously got it from her to come out, and then he came with a couple of other friends, and they did a season, and then they, you know, took pictures, and we're looking through, you know, in the winter at these pictures in the freezing cold in you know, out in Buckinghamshire, going, oh my god, we've got to do this next year. So then, yeah, so we took the plunge on this first lads trip. I could go on for ages about it, so I'm not going to go off on one. But yeah, anyway, so I'd got sort of a little bit hooked from there, went down to Café Del Mar and watched the sunset with, and this is when there was thousands of people down there, and this was happening every night, and there was the fire throwers, there was the, I don't know, the atmosphere was just electric down
back
there.
Back then you could take your drinks from the supermarket,
absolutely,
and go and sit on the rocks, couldn't you? And now, obviously, all of that is terraces, and you have to pay 150 quid per head to even go and experience the sunset, unless you're walking past now. Which
I think that's what it was as well. We were on a massive budget. You know, we were 17, but still, you know, didn't have that much money. Yeah. I mean, that Deja Vu night was the only night we could afford to go into a club.
Yeah.
And then all the rest of it was sort of, you know, a bit more West End. We did the Café Del Mar. I think we actually made El Divino, but we didn't have the best night, but that doesn't matter. Mm. It was all about wow, and then seeing Ibiza town, you know, it didn't really take it as much in as what I probably would have done if I look back now.
Yeah, of course.
But anyway, got the whole sort of sun, you know, the Café Del Mar side, and just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe the music they were playing, and it was all this sort of then hearing a lot more house music and stuff like that. So then suddenly got back to London. And
so you all survived the week, unscathed.
Just about, yeah.
Probably not much sleep between you all.
I think there's definitely some haziness of my stories that I can remember.
Yeah, or not remember a lot of them. So then, obviously, that planted the seed for Ibiza, and you were like, that's it, I love it. And, you know, although there wasn't much drum and bass and jungle, which was your jam, there was enough to entice you to come back again. Did you then subsequently come? Like, was that it? Was that a breather in your heart?
It was the next trip for me that was it. So basically went back to London, sort of was filtering out of, because a lot of, you know, most of my life's been about music as well. I mean, obviously I've changed careers now, we'll get into that. But it was about you know, fine. I just having that goosebump moments every time you went out and, you know, listening to whatever, certain tracks or whatever. But when I got back to England after that trip, I then started really getting into my house music. And some other guys I knew who, you know, lived near High Wycombe, blah, 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 were running little house nights. And then they ended up running a night in Pasha in London. I'm fast-forwarding quite a bit here, but they started running the Funky Room at Pasha in Victoria. And I'd only just started sort of DJing, playing around. I mean, I'd had decks since I was 13 years old, but I was emceeing to drum and bass and thought that's what I was going to do. But anyway, started getting into the DJ side and started buying records at the record shop every Saturday morning it was. And, well, just used to look forward to that every time. Basically, then started getting into the house scene, getting into the side of running nights, promoting. The next trip I went to Ibiza was 2004, so it was only 2 years later. And what a different trip I had. I came with a really good friend of mine, Peter, who had a lot of fun. We landed and he got invited. One of his friends was DJing at DC10. So I'd heard about this place, never really didn't know what to expect. And the only feeling I can describe is it was like going to that first rave. We were in a taxi at, I think, about 6 o'clock on a Monday morning going to Circa Loco. And I had no idea. So I walked in. I think I was 19. We got to the front of the queue and there was this big elephant track being played. You know, an elephant sort of blowing its trump. And my mate Pete went, "That's Stuart Patterson's on." And that was who was getting us in. So I didn't really know Stuart and the Faith lot very well at all then. So anyway, I remember we were queuing, queues outside there. I was like, "Jeez, this is Monday morning." Like, this is different level. So anyway, walked in there and just went, whoa. And just never seen anything like it. And
it packs a powerful punch, does DC10.
Unbelievable. So I, you know, again, I'm one of these people, I have to see it before I believe it. Mm-hmm. And sort of obviously heard some stories about DC10 and then, you know, didn't really think anything of it until you get there. And then suddenly you're in there and you're going, I mean, I've never seen anything like it, ever. And I just remember these big industrial fans. Friend of mine, Matt, as well, he was, Tanya Volcano was playing. So anyway, there was all these artists that I didn't know. And I've got photos with, I'm in the same photos with Charlie Chester and Joe Mills. And a friend of mine was, you know, just having fun. He kept going up, pressing the foghorn that they used to have in there when when Tony Volcano was playing, and I thought it was amazing. I thought, oh, go on, Matt, go and give it another press, and the crowd just going wild like that. So anyway, so that was a great, great experience. And then we then got invited to a villa party the next night, and we got given a little toy animal, little plastic animal when we...
Which was like the invitation.
Yeah, so we got given this plastic animal. So it was actually, this is a great idea, and we should definitely do this again. But you had to then, so you got to the gate, you showed the plastic animal, then you walked through the gate, and you go to the bar, and you basically try and match with someone else who's all the difference. You've got a little rhinoceros, a little elephant, a little giraffe, a lion, whatever. And you'd match it with someone and you'd get a little present from the bar.
Uh-huh.
And so that, and then there was these little dwarfs walking around with trays, and it was just crazy and but fun. And everyone was just so lovely, chatty. The music was great. I can't really remember what was being played with the music. I was just taking in the whole atmosphere. So I was
That's
like,
a true Ibiza villa party.
Sort of, you know, and I remember my mate Matt, who was quite a bit older than me and, you know, part with the Faith guys, and they went, this is proper Balearic. This is what Ibiza's about. And I just went, well, in the last 2 days, you have showed me something that I never knew existed.
And it's a feeling. It's not just, you know, obviously looking at the dwarves walking around with trays with goodies and little plastic animals matching up to meet people at the bar.
Yeah.
And all of these
and it was just so
amazing
sad.
Elements that bring together this magic of these Ibiza parties. And anything goes is what I keep saying
Absolutely.
About Ibiza.
Absolutely.
It's a feeling, it's an energy, it's a vibe, isn't it? And that is what got you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so it carried on from there. So this was the second most incredible experience I've ever had. So we actually, I think we went home, actually had a little bit of sleep that night. Then the next night, Stuart was playing at El Divino. So, you know, I'd never been to this club before, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, we get down there, obviously quite nice having guest list the whole time as well.
Sure.
And went in there, he played a great set. I mean, the club's incredible and it's just beautiful being on the sort of the marina front. And I just remember going, so the last few days, it's been Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And you know, anyway, so I'd been told this is what the proper Balearic experience is. I'm like, this is amazing. And then from there, they go, oh yeah, tomorrow we've got sunset at Cafe Tomorrow. I went, I've done that. And they went, so this was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We've done all these incredible things, incredible clubs, and met these most incredible people. And I was just on this sort of networking buzz. And I ended up staying out for another few weeks, ended up on credit cards and not really working that summer, but just having a great time.
Yeah, I think many people listening will have done the same. So you've obviously coming out, enjoying Ibiza,
yeah.
Having your holidays, you know, sucking it all in. When did you actually say, you know what, I'm going to make a move here? When did you know that this was going to be your home?
So I obviously went back from that trip going, how on earth am I going to make Ibiza somewhere I want to can actually sustain living? Because,
yeah.
You know, obviously I'd gone out, I'd spent a lot of money, and I wasn't
even
really
even though
up
you
for
had guest list everywhere.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Still expensive to be here.
Absolutely. I mean, we were eating nice restaurants, and I was going, well, this is quite an expensive lifestyle. So anyway, I went back to London, and you know. And I had been dreaming about it ever since and never thought it could be anything that would be possible. So anyway, went back to London, carried on with DJing, doing parties here and there and warehouses in East London and secret locations, and won't go into that side of it so
brought
much.
Some of that Ibiza vibe over to the parties
Absolutely.
You were doing in London,
Absolutely.
I suppose.
Some of the friends I'd met in Ibiza or people I'd met from London came to our parties, and you ended up building a network of people, well, all like-minded people that were coming here anyway, and
yeah.
putting their friends in touch. And I was like, this is what I had when I first was got into drum and bass scene, and everyone was really friendly with each other, and then it just suddenly got... But it was like, this friendliness never ended.
Yeah, and it still hasn't ended.
No, absolutely.
Just growing and growing and growing.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so fast forward to 2008, and I actually was running a party in London with a good friend of mine, and we wanted to bring the brand to Ibiza. But we came over in 2008. I had flyers done up, demo CDs, and went, right, this is my chance to really try and make Ibiza work this time, because I'm going out there to work. I had, we were running a night at Warrenar every Thursday, obviously not a lot of money, But it was a start. You know, it was like, yes, we've got a regular night, we've got a regular gig. And then I met up with John Jack, who's a long-term resident over here, and we started running working for DJ Mag with Joe Upton. So anyway, all these things are coming together now, and I'm like, right, you've gone in with the right head now. You've gone here not going, I'm on holiday straight away. I am
going to try... It's a different mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to try and do a full season this time and be working and, you know, yeah, not on holiday. Obviously enjoy yourself, but obviously have a bit of a, you know, not every night is Friday night. So anyway, it was quite difficult, as it is for everyone. But so I had a few things going on. I was working for Amnesia Made in Italy, PRing, doing a bit of taxiing. So anyway, doing a bit of everything, like most people are here, trying to find their feet. And so anyway, got had a great summer. I mean, obviously went to a lot of workers' parties, a lot of networking, quite a few gigs, and really enjoyed those. So anyway, got to the end of the summer, and I was thinking, God, I haven't got much money. I've survived the summer, but how am I going to survive the winter? And I stayed with a friend of mine who'd been a long-term resident for here for years, for a couple of weeks. And he said, well, you know, what are you going to do? And I thought, it's like I'm a bit of construction, you know, anything.
To
I
just wanted to Ibiza. Stay,
yeah, because I'd really got into the whole Ibiza life by then. And I think my mindset had changed that I really wanted it to make it work. I did fail. There was no potential work, or there was the odd day here. And I was just like, look, you know, you can't carry on. But this isn't the end. This isn't the end. I thought, you know, don't be defeated. You've managed to do the whole summer now and enjoy it. So anyway, went away and went back to London. Cut long story short with this, I was started running parties again, put a lot of money into a party, and it flopped. Lost everything, lost a lot of savings, blah blah blah, and just went, I need to find something else. I just fell out of love with the scene, not the people, just the scene, and just thought, is this how I'm gonna be, you know, for the rest of my life? It's just sort of in and out and making a little bit here, and you know, a lot of my friends who persisted are now doing really well in international, you know, club circuit, DJs, promoters, whatever, but it wasn't for me. And I luckily, in that 2000, so that season I'd just done, I forgot to mention this actually, which is quite important, we'd actually met up with someone who's got a really successful charter business over here. Can I mention names?
And, sure. And
yeah, so Boats Ibiza, Neil Wood. Yeah, who was someone I met in some of these workers' parties. And it was his first year with his first boat. And he'd basically come over here with this little speedboat. I think only a 26-foot boat. We got quite chatting at some of these workers' parties. He was, you know, he wasn't really running a full-time business at this point. He just came over here with his boat, trying to get some charters. There was nothing else in San Antonio like it. So I ended up, as well as part of one of my jobs, was to help try and get, you know, promote his charter business with flyers as well. So I'd have my Made in Italy for Amnesia flyers in one pocket, my Boats Ibiza flyers in the next pocket, and then obviously trying to just get even workers and doing, you know, 30, 40 euros a head, you know, trying to fill the boat like that. And this was just to get a bit of brand awareness. You know, Neil wasn't really, he was just looking to make some money back and obviously try and grow a business at some point. And then Neil said, oh, you know, do you want to come help down and fuel it and wash it and clean it? And I, by the end of the summer, was really enjoying doing the little time I was doing on the boat, because I was obviously working for other people and trying, you know, jack of all trades at that point of the
summer.
Sure,
fingers in pies. Yeah. That's how you survive.
That's it. So at that point, I was like, I really enjoyed that. And Neil used to work on the big super yachts. You know, he was all over the world on big boats and doing Atlantic crossings.
As a captain?
No, he was just on his crew. So anyway, I listened to a few of his stories, and then obviously helping out with the smaller boat. And I went, he went, you know, you could go out and do this. You know, you go and get some certificates and some courses behind you. But, you know, it's definitely suit you. And he goes, you definitely enjoy it. And I thought, well, I don't want to go back. Oh, I couldn't go into a job I don't enjoy. I have to be, you know, I'm not a 9-to-5er. I've learned that. And I thought, do you know what? That sounds really interesting. So anyway, I didn't really think much of it. Got back into London. So as I said, ran this party, flopped. And I went, right, I really fancy this boat thing. And I thought, you know, I'm quite hands-on, so I thought that
and you're
that
very personable. You're a really bubbly guy, you know. You've got to have
which,
that
which
side.
Which another side, yeah. I mean, you have to be a very good people person, and I'll go into what you know. It's sort of, you know, so you get very demanding clients that you just have to deal with in a certain way. But and anyway, looking up all these courses and went, okay, well, look, if I'm going to do it, let's do it properly. So I went and spent, I think I spent another year getting some savings, getting some money for my parents. And then...
Thanks, parents.
Yeah, thanks, parents. Well, alone. But I said, look, this is something that I can really make something of. And I said, it's a bit more... I think it's a bit more of a safety net and a bit not... A
proper career,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a guarantee that you're going to have work.
Well, yeah, I mean, but then my dad was saying, oh, it looks like fun. And I said, yeah, fun, but it's you can make a career out of it. And, you know, Neil only did it for a couple of years. And then one of my other really close friends, his brother was doing it. And I think he'd just finished on yachts. But anyway, getting a bit of a lowdown, a bit of background. So I wasn't walking in blind. So anyway, I went and did my yacht master course for 3 months and along with and some other courses. And then pretty much packed my bags from London and was walking the docks in, so I don't know if anyone, you know, will know the superyacht industry, but, you know, the original way of getting work would be, you would be walking the docks and the marinas with your CV, your bag ready, and literally wait for that phone to ring or an email to come in. And that was the original way of doing it. It's a bit different now. But anyway, so I did that. I was in the south of France. I was in Antibes. I was getting the train to Monaco, to Cannes, to Nice, and just literally putting my CV under every single boat. I luckily met, because I was 25 at the time and wasn't sort of 18 who just left school. I sort of, you know, was, to be honest,
a little bit more experienced.
Yeah,
life.
And a bit more grounded. I found, you know, because I was working away in Ibiza, okay, they were quite crazy summers, but. You know, I'd learnt that, you know, it wasn't my first time away from the UK, sure. Or first time from home. So it wasn't, and because of my sort of experience with all of that, it was like, it wasn't like I was going for a holiday. And it, I wasn't stuck, because I think if I'd got into yachting at younger, I probably would have been the same and probably just not treated it as a career to start with.
Everything happens for a reason at the right
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. So anyway, eventually this phone rang. And
hallelujah.
Yeah, literally was. It was literally like, oh my God, is this actually going to happen? So anyway, I had to go and meet this crew on a Sunday afternoon in Monaco in a bar. And I thought, this is a bit odd. So the first mate rang me, who I'm still really close with now, actually. But anyway, so he's like second in command on the boat. He said, you know, I'm the chief officer on a 70-metre... It's a quite prestigious ship in...
Yeah, that's big, half 70
yeah,
metres.
Yeah, it's big. And it's been in Monaco for about 25 years. So it's a very well-known boat, but I won't mention any names. So anyway, he said, come down, you know, come and meet the crew. And what I liked about that was, at the point, I was thinking, why would you invite me on a Sunday? But it was to see how I was socially and how I got on with the rest of the crew. Not all the crew were out, because there was 22 crew on this boat in total.
Yeah, say,
so this was mainly the deck crew, who I was joining as, you know, I was joining as a green deckhand, they call them, you know, a newbie. You know, obviously done my courses, but you hadn't actually had any experience on the actual, you know, work field. So anyway, got on with the guys. There was a few English, there was a couple of South Africans, couple of Kiwis. So anyway, it was quite a mixture of a crew. And then some of the crew that I hadn't met were Filipino as well. So I think they did a bit more of the interior, and there was one deck crew. But so an absolute mixture. But anyway, he said, right, well, you start tomorrow. I was like, what, tomorrow? So anyway, I had to go back to the hotel. Obviously, you know, I'd packed my bags for the next day, turned up to this boat and went, whoa. And, you know, so, I mean, it's talking 70 metres, it's big. You know, it had the helipad on the front, and it was, I mean, this was immaculate. It was 25 years old, and it literally looked brand new. That's how well they keep these boats. So anyway, I had the most amazing 2 years, incredible crew. Everyone got on very well, you know, and my role as a deckhand, obviously, was learning ropes, learning, you know, just general maintenance of a boat and how to treat teak, how to treat paints.
All the toys that have to come out in and out. I've seen the programme Below Deck.
Yeah, exactly. So Below Deck's great, because it's actually given people an insight. Okay, yeah. The characters are pretty...
Far out,
but...
Like they're definitely chosen. It's definitely reality TV, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. But it does give people a bit of an idea of I mean, you're very...
how it all works what your responsibilities and roles and stuff are of each person, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think I would have made a bloody decent same, chief
you know
stew.
What? You 100% would, but then how different would your life have been then?
I know. I think I'm the kind of girl that whatever I turn my hand to, I do pretty well because I put 100% into everything. I mean, a motto in our house. If I say to the girls, my kids, what's our family motto? They'll say, put 100% into everything you do. And when I first started watching that show, I literally was like, oh, I want to have another life now so I can go back to being 20, 21 and do, you know, the whole yachting thing.
That
thing.
Job would have been
it looks so much fun. I'm going to get the girls to do it now and they can. Absolutely. I can live vicariously through them.
Absolutely. No, 100%. I think it's great, I mean, especially if you get them into it young. I definitely want... We'll get onto my lovely little family soon, but... Because I hadn't had them by this point.
No. I was going to ask, when did Faye, your wife, your lovely wife, come into all of this?
So, this is just coming. So, anyway, so I will not go too much into the super yacht side of my life, but it's been incredible. I mean, I learned on a very prestigious boat. I learned to the highest level. I was driving Bentleys around Monaco, down the south of France. We were into Italy. We went up to Venice. We did a lot of the Mediterranean, Sardinia. And
were you moving up the ranks then?
So
as you
at this point, no, I was doing 2 years as a deckhand, and they wanted to promote me to second officer. At this point, one of my standing officers was moving up to captain on another boat, so I got poached. This happens a lot in the industry as well because it's quite small. Got poached. He
headhunted. Darling.
Yes, headhunted. Headhunted. Oh yeah, that's much better. So he went over to run a boat in the States, a 50 metre brand, I think it's brand new or a year old motor yacht, and he was going to push me up to first officer, and I went, oh my god, I've got to take that. So I'd done 2 years as deckhand and sort of moved up to a bit of a lead deckhand role, which was amazing. As I say, you know, the invaluable experience I learned from that yacht at such a high level. The owner was very hard work, very demanding. Everything had to be not just perfect, beyond perfect.
I mean, if you're rich enough to have a 70-metre boat that is immaculately kept, you know...
And it was private. There was no rental in it.
Oh, really? Yeah. So it was just him and his family
just
used it?
Just him and his family, yeah.
Wow.
I'm
desperate to know who it is. Can you name names?
I don't think I can actually say much about that one because that is a very
secret. I don't want to get into trouble, yeah.
But we, I mean, he had his own 747 as well. And I remember him turning up on his own, first time I'd ever met the owner. And we're at the airport. There's 8 crew. There is Gurkhas, you know, like sort of personal staff. There is 2 vans outside. And this little man, must be about 5 foot, walks out and that was it. And I was like, at the plane, you know...
You expected a whole entourage or something.
Exactly. I was expecting there at least to be one other family member or something. And this tiny little man just walks out, walks in front. And I remember my captain at the time going, that's the boss. I went, oh.
Oh, that's a bit underwhelming.
And I was like, all this for that?
Yeah.
But that just shows you what it's like. You know, and they turn up to the boat. It's lovely. I mean, you know, if you're in that world, all the crew line up. And as I say, this one... It was a bit different. It wasn't very, it wasn't as family orientated structure.
Well, the family was the crew. No, that's what kept you going.
Yeah. So we as a crew gelled, but then anyway, I'd done my sort of apprenticeship. I'd call it for those 2 years. You know, as I say, enjoyed it, and then got poached. Headhunted. Over to the States. So then I was over there for a year and a half, and we worked for a lovely American family with kids. And they treated us like this was a completely different experience. You know, we were going out on fishing trips with them. We'd go round to their house for barbecues. And I was going, oh, this is lovely. This is really, you know, nice. It was almost, you're a big family. The crew were a family with the owner. And some crew like this, some crew don't. I mean, I particularly like it. I think it makes you feel part of their life, you know, or their experience, you know, to a level in the sand, you know. But anyway, So did 2 years on there, and they unfortunately sold the yacht. I was thinking, oh God, it was up for sale. And I was thinking, oh God, what's going to be the next move? You know, how quickly is the yacht going to go? And I got back in touch with Mr. Neil Wood again. And I remember him saying, are you sure you want to come back here? You know, you've moved on so far with the yachts. That I said, no, do you know what? I've actually been land-based. I've done 5 years at sea. So I basically said, oh, look, you know, you can come and be a captain on some of the boats. And I've been obviously driving all the tenders for all these other big boats, and actually parked some of the bigger boats. But anyway, it was sort of like a bit of a massive decision. All, you know, do I carry on with my career, or do I put it on hold for a summer and, you know, go out there, earn good money, and also have get my Ibiza back?
Yeah.
So it was almost that time to get it back. So anyway, I took the plunge, came back over, and hit the ground running. I mean, Neil had 5 boats by this point, and a Sunseeker 50. And so anyway, I fitted in. I was more of a sort of general maintenance manager as well as captain. So anyway, I had a great summer with the boats, taking people all over Ibiza, and I just went, oh my God, I'm even in love with this place even more. Mm. You know, from the view, from the water looking in, you're like, it's just so peaceful out there.
It's
so
beautiful.
Isn't it? I mean, you've got done many boat days outside, and you've come out, luckily you've come out in the Aurora that we'll get onto as well, but it was just, oh my God, going past this Vedra, and I was like, oh my God, because I'd never done a boat trip in these previous trips. Yeah. And I was like, does this island get any better?
Yeah.
And I've been all over the world.
The gift that keeps on giving.
And I've been all over the world, and I was like, actually, the nicest beaches, or some of the nicest beaches, are up there with all the places I've been all over the Med and all over the States and everything. I thought, there's nothing quite like the Balearics. I mean, Mallorca as well. Mallorca's got some beautiful beaches, but there's something about Ibiza and Formentera, because it's such a smaller island.
Yeah.
It just feels that bit more unique.
Yep.
And actually, everything's quite close to get to. You know, the beaches are actually, especially if you're on the west coast. So anyway, so I'd basically fallen in love with the island and had an amazing summer, met amazing people again, and managed to keep my job, which was quite good. And anyway, the last week was I moved in with a friend in Jesus, and we went to the Amnesia closing, and it was October the 13th. Anyway, so we went there, had a great, great night, left there about midday, went back, thought I'd have a little rest, and then my friend's girlfriend was working at a little bar at the end of the street in Jesus. And
called
she went,
Fab.
Yeah, called Fab. You remember it well.
Yeah.
And so she goes, oh, you must come with me. And I went, oh, I don't know about that. I said, I don't feel particularly great. Maybe I'll just chill here and come down in a bit. She says, no, they're fine. You must come down. So anyway, of course I went yes. I'm a bit of a yes man. Ended up walking down to this lovely bar called Fab, and looking over and looking at the bar and going, oh, hello, nice. Oh yeah, this is quite nice in here. It's a nice view. So anyway, sat at the bar, and then pretended it was my birthday. So I was getting free trapitos at the time. So I was getting free couple of yerbas. And anyway, this girl behind the bar got chatting to me, and we were chatting away, and she said, oh, what have you been doing here anyway? So we just got on like a house on fire. And I thought, well, she's quite good looking as well. Well, this is great. What best fake birthday I've ever had.
Yeah.
So anyway, a few drinks more, and then some of the regulars that were coming in, and obviously they're going, oh, this guy's birthday. So at this point I was obviously getting pretty drunk, and at that point I think this girl, well, I might as well say her name now, Faye, was actually about to leave to go home. And I was going, you can't go home. You must stay here and have another drink. And she's like, oh, I think you've had too much already. And I said, oh, well, one more. So anyway, we ended up chatting away. And I can't quite remember the hazy bit of me getting up on the pool table and emceeing to drum and bass.
Oh, God.
on the first meet. And I thought, you know, the next day I thought, well, God, what have you done there? But anyway, it went down quite well. And then after that, I actually said, oh, shall we take you on your first date? She goes, what? She goes, I go, what now? She goes, now? And I go, yeah. So we went over to Iduka, which was the children's infant school. And there was a Mickey Mouse, and we had a little kiss in front of Mickey Mouse. She's quite strange.
That's sweet.
So anyway, we were sort of walking in holding hands as if we'd known each other for a lot longer than a few hours.
Yeah.
So anyway, we ended up the bar closing, went back to my friend's house and had some more drinks and a bit of a carry on. And then, so I, as I said, I was going to be leaving at the end of this week and going back onto another boat. So I cancelled the boat and then basically ended up staying for another 3 months. And, you know, obviously had some money saved up from the summer and then didn't actually have any sort of work lined up. And I thought, oh, no, we're not getting to this stage again. So anyway, I did eventually have to go back to work and went to Italy for 3 months. And then from those sort of, you know, 3 months was going, oh my God, I can't believe how much I miss this girl. And couldn't really get into work. I was working, you know, it was awkward being so far away. And I remember Faye having to get flights, meeting in Nice, and, you know, playing the sort of long relationship game and it only being every few, every few weeks or months or whatever. Well, it felt like months, but every few weeks. So anyway, I was like, well, this isn't going to work. I'm going to go back. So it was just about coming up to start of summer again. Ended up doing another season with Boats Ibiza. And then Faye fell pregnant with Teddy, yeah. My little
so
boy.
So that was it, signed and sealed?
Absolutely. So then I was like, right, I'm 100% committed. I always wanted to be here, but this has just cemented me here. And it was all about how am I 100% going to make this work now?
Yeah.
So I ended up doing whatever I could, boat related, maintenance, spraying boats. Luckily picked up all these skills along the way. So this was a case of, I need this to work. We didn't meet in the UK and came over here. We met here.
Yeah.
Her life has generally been over here. Her parents were here in the 85, I think, for 10 years. Had a bar over here. So anyway, Faye, you know, has spent a lot of her life here. And then obviously we'd met here. I had no intention of going back to the UK, whatever, anyway. And I was thinking, right, I can make this boat thing work out here. So I did another year for Boats Ibiza. And then I just wanted to get back onto the super yacht, get my career back on track. So I ended up actually taking over on a 38-metre yacht with 6 crew, which was heavy charter. We were doing 12 weeks back-to-back, so 24-hour turnarounds.
Wow.
Laundry off. I mean, it was an operation.
I've seen the show. I know how it is when they have to turn it around quickly. It's a like you said, it's a big operation.
It really is. And the lack of sleep you're getting, and as a captain as well, you know, that you're... Not only are you dealing with guests who might be up from dusk till dawn, you're also having to deal with, if you're at anchor, if you've got problems with the boat. We had lots of problems
all
with
the
air
crew,
conditioning.
Managing the crew. Who are knackered and arguing. And
absolutely. It really is. It's a really tough environment. You're sharing a shoebox with a stranger. Hopefully you get on with these strangers because that makes it a lot easier. And again, if you're with the right people, it's an adventure.
Yeah.
So ran this boat. We had, you know, Ronaldo on, Danny Osvaldo, football bad boys. We had acoustic guitars delivered at 2 o'clock in the morning. And anyway, had an incredible season. Not without bits and pieces going wrong, but helicopters flying in with boat parts and all sorts of dramas. But anyway,
survived.
Yeah, survived and had, yeah, I mean, the
and
best
that was
summer
based
ever.
Here in Ibiza, so you could be with the family.
Well, I say based with the family. I was going past our house doing figures of eights of Mallorca and Ibiza for the whole summer. So it was probably more stressful for me and more, looking in at your house going, that's where I should be, but
yeah.
Bye.
Tough.
So from there anyway, ended up, having this busy summer. And then unfortunately, again, the owner sold the boat, put the boat up for sale. And this is the problem with the industry. It is very fast moving and everything could be incredibly going well. And then suddenly, yeah, the boat's up for sale. The owner's lost interest in the boat. So it's a very volatile environment to work in sometimes.
Not stable.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought, oh, God. So anyway, it was sort of back to the drawing board. And I remember from that summer as well, that was when my little girl was conceived, my little girl, yeah. Blossom. So I came back for one night in about 3 months and Faye had been at Boiler Room at Pike's and she said, are you coming? And I went, the last thing I need to do at the moment is go anywhere. I was so exhausted from the chartering and everything. I just went, I'll stay at home, darling. You go, have a great time. So anyway, about 1 o'clock in the morning, door crashes open, bang, crash, wallet. There comes Faye. And anyway, so whatever happened that night was definitely the night that little Blossom was conceived. So
there you go.
I've got two beautiful children who, you know, have been born here and who are now 7 and 5. Oh no, so 7 and 6, six last week. So from there, I just had Blossom and was going into the next summer. And was looking for something a bit more land-based again. I thought, oh, you know, it's been great. You've been back out there for a year, but actually, you've got no time with the family.
Yeah. And when they're young, they don't stay young for very long. They grow so quickly.
And that was it. It was really missing out with them and you coming back. And it's almost that you were a stranger in your own house, which was not very nice. And not good for them. And, you know,
tough for Faye.
Yeah.
Bringing two kids up on her own, pretty much.
Absolutely. Really tough summers. So it was time that I went, right, I need to find something land-based. But I also need, you know, money to be coming in all year round. And it's quite difficult, especially, you know, what Ibiza's like in the winter. It does go quite sort of a skeleton crew and everyone sort of downsizes. And there's not many boats that keep full-time crew. So I was lucky I got a phone call from my electronics guy who said, right, nothing, something you might not be interested in, but there's a brand new day boat. The owner's just brought a villa and they've just brought this brand new day boat and they are going to, you know, charter it a bit. And, you know, do you want a job for the summer? I think you can get, you know, a fairly good salary. And, you know, just go from there. So I thought, well, that's all right. That'll pull me another 6 months up. That gives me a bit more time to find my feet. So anyway, and took this boat over, treated it like a little mini super yacht rather than just some, you know, day boat. So we were doing, again, you know, sort of tours of the west coast of Ibiza, going over to Formentera a lot. And it was just, it was beautiful because it was brand new. And we had all the sea bobs on there. So it was a small boat with all the toys.
Yeah.
So anyway, got on very well with the owners and sort of got to the end of the summer and we had a fairly good first summer. It wasn't all about having the boat out every day. It was more a case of let's just cover some costs. They said, oh, well, what are you doing now? And I went, I don't know. They said, oh, well, we really would like to, you know, sort of keep you on. How do you fancy managing our villa in the winter? And I said, well, I haven't really got much experience with it, but, you know, they go, well, you've run 38 metre boats and let's just treat it like that.
Yeah.
So it was a case of, you know, of basically, yeah, get up there and ended up getting quite a few projects that they wanted sorted and, again, just getting quotes. And so it was very similar. I mean, it was very similar. I mean, with a boat, you've got a lot more moving parts, so there's a lot more mechanical side, but generally you are making it a well-maintained, you know, you're keeping it to the highest level you can. So yeah, so anyway, ended up doing that. We ended up having a great winter. They were really happy with the work I'd achieved and all the projects were finished for the next year. And it's a very busy rental villa and everything was done and ready for when they came in and painted and everything. So I thought, oh, that was great. And I actually learned a lot, you know, even though my Spanish is pretty bad.
You can survive.
Yeah, it was. It was a case of, everything got done, so it must can't have been that bad. That has been where I've been at for about 3 years with my current employee. So we still got the day boat, but then we actually ended up getting a bigger boat because that was the dream anyway, was to get a boat that we could eventually go around the world in and I'd probably go on a rotation. So year 2020, we got a 38-metre Explorer yacht. The only people I probably would want to go back out to sea with is actually the guys I work with now who, as you know, become friends, a bit family as well. You know, they look after us very well and, you know, we get to use the boat sometimes when they're not here and we get to use the villa sometimes and it's just lovely perks like that make you feel, you know, part of it.
We're just appreciated and trusted.
Absolutely,
It all comes down to trust, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So, yeah, it was... I thought, oh, God, right, here I go again. Back out to sea. So it was a long, you know, Faye knew it was coming. The kids were still at an age where, I mean, they didn't really understand. And it was like, well, where's Dad going? Where's Papa going? So it was a bit difficult at first. But I'll be honest, I was so busy. I didn't really have time.
No.
And the work-life balance was just crazy. And at that point, I wasn't in rotation. So I didn't know when I was coming back. So I found it very difficult. So anyway, unfortunately, after the second season, we had a huge yacht fire. The lithium battery caught fire from one of the toys, one of the luxury toys, like a jet surf. The boat was a complete loss. So luckily, no one was hurt or injured. And luckily, it was only possessions that were damaged.
Well, the whole boat was burnt out,
wasn't
it?
Completely. So it was absolutely shocking. We were all, you know, absolutely gutted because we'd just started chartering this boat. We'd proved that the project worked, working with the right people, had an amazing crew, and it was just everything was working as it should.
Yeah.
So that was a shame, but then it was back over to Ibiza To then, yeah, just take
which
over the day.
Which meant you could come back to your family, yeah. But not in the way you wanted to, really.
Exactly that, Sadie. It was a case of, you know, what on earth, you know, what am I going to do now? But then I thought, well, it's so good to get back into family life. And then the last 2 years, I've been, you know, Ibiza-based and running the day boat Aurora, which is actually been lovely to take, you know, my regular guests back out. And we've built a lovely little setup over there. We're the only boat like it on the West Coast. And I would just love some of the people who maybe be listening to this to come and experience that.
Bringing us back to Ibiza then, and your family and what you like to do here. So the Aurora, we all know and adore this boat. It's such a beautiful boat, and I'm sure we'll go on and maybe you can offer something to the listeners later. But
absolutely.
You here being here with your family then, so what is your favourite things to do with the family here, apart from taking them out on the Aurora for the day? You know, this is really your home now, and in the last 2 years you've been able to cement yourself and live as a family here.
Yeah.
Not knowing that you were going to be here or how long you were going to be here before must have been pretty tough for the kids and for you, and especially for Faye.
Absolutely.
So now that you've put down roots, what's your favourite things to do here? What would you say?
Well, obviously boat days are the best days.
Yeah.
But aside from that, definitely beach days with the family. You can't beat that. There's just endless amounts of beaches to go to. We love even going over to like Calicabo one day, and each beach is different. I have fallen in love with e-biking. I know that's not family related, but just found it's just been incredible. It's been the only sport that I've found that is like being like snowboarding or skiing up in the mountains, and the goosebumps I get from that. It's just been incredible, and just the community around, the friendships I've built, you know, knowing people over here for the last 10 years but not being able to really cement anything because I've been away and you're in and out, and then to now being here full time and having winters here and actually just being able to see people I see maybe in the summer for 5 minutes and actually to meet the real them. And, you know, we are so lucky with the people we've got and the network around us and the support we have, and not having, you know, most of us haven't got family here, and friends are your family.
Yeah, totally. We are very lucky. I think everyone that I've interviewed so far have all said that, you know. We are super, super lucky with the community we've got. So you've got the boats, obviously. So that's kind of what your job is now, is in you run the house and then you run the Aurora. So tell us a little bit about that and what you have to offer the listeners.
So Aurora, we are a 40-foot, so 13-metre luxury sort of day boat. We are moored in San Antonio on the West Coast. So what we offer on the package is a sort of, you know, unlimited beer, wine, soft drinks, and I think for the listeners of the podcast, we'll definitely be able to include the two Seabobs.
Oh, nice.
Which are normally an optional extra, but they're, for anyone who doesn't know, they're underwater scooters. If you Google Seabob,
really good fun.
Seabob in action, but they're great fun.
Well, at the end of this, on the show notes, I'll list the Aurora, have the link page to you and all of that kind of stuff. And maybe we'll just put a little Seabobs included or something on it. So then when they get in contact, they'll know, know they've come through and they get that deal for free.
Absolutely. We've got the two paddle boards on board. And then obviously being on the West Coast, we've got the sunset that goes into the sea.
And it's an 8-hour day charter, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, we normally start around 10 to midday. And, you know, if you didn't want to go to Formentera, we go up north, up to Cala Charraca. And
some beautiful bays along the north, east and the north side, which many people don't get to see.
Absolutely.
And like you said before, seeing Ibiza from the ocean, looking back onto it, is a whole new viewpoint for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as I say, with the heading north, you know, even in July and August, it does get busier on the waters. But you head north, you go to the Isles of Margaritas, and there's like an archway in the rock. And I think that's like the gateway to the north. And suddenly you go through there and, you know, you hardly see any boats. You don't see any villas or any construction on the hills. And you feel like you don't feel like you're in Ibiza.
No.
And you've literally just turned right out the marina. And you're in complete wilderness. And even if you head south, you know, there's some beautiful points, and obviously you'll go past some of the, you know, the best beaches, the Calacontas, and, you know, I often stop there on the way back for sunset, and you know, Cala Torrida, Cala de Hort. I mean, it just goes on, and you know, to be honest, I just love showing people what I know about the island from the waterside. And a lot of people who, you know, I've only ever been to Formentera. I've done the, yeah. I call it the milk run. And, yeah. you know, once you've been there, it is beautiful, but there is so much more stunning places to see as well. And you still get the turquoise water and yeah. you
and
just
you can
get more
snorkel
from your day.
In the little bays yeah. and get the paddle boards out, which is
absolutely.
Really nice.
Absolutely. And not have other boats around you. You know, it's a bit more about you and you're on an adventure. You know, yeah. you're seeing what a lot of people don't ever see, I don't think.
Yeah.
So.
Very lucky to have that world at your fingertips, really.
Yes.
And you're very generous as well, because we often get a little pre-season and end
you
of
do,
season
do.
Drawn
I think,
out,
I think
don't
we're due one soon.
I think with this weather being really nice as it is, I mean, we've been so lucky the last week or so, haven't we?
Absolutely. 25
degrees, I think it might be, tomorrow.
I think it's been like this beginning of March, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I think it's going to be hot like it was last year.
I know, I can feel it already.
I know, because we all dread it, don't we? Like, oh, God, get the fans and the AC on already. Okay, great. So we've got the Aurora, which is what you're doing. You've got all the beautiful things, e-biking and such like. I mean, everyone's going on about the hiking on the island as well. So
yeah, hiking, biking.
Yeah, hiking, biking on the water with your beautiful family. So what one piece of advice would you give to anyone coming to Ibiza to get the best out of it, either if they're moving here or if they're going to come on holiday?
I would definitely say... be very adaptable. Be come over here with a very, very open mind. I think, as I say, when I came here the first few times, I didn't quite have the right mindset. Yeah, I think absorb everything that everyone tells you when they're coming over. Listen to everyone. You know, just you can. There's nothing wrong with being a very good listener. Expect the unexpected, and maybe what you came out here to do is not what you end up doing.
Yeah. Well, this is it, and what a wonderful path that you've had. You know. And party-wise, you still get to do your DJing and stuff a
yeah,
bit,
yeah,
don't you?
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
that's still a love of yours.
I think I enjoy it more
yeah.
now. I
yeah,
enjoy it more
well,
now
no
than
pressure.
I'm stressed. Absolutely.
And I've seen you in action. You're a very good DJ.
Oh, thank
love
you very
tunes.
Much, lady. Very kind. yeah.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much. We could talk forever.
Yeah, we could.
I've really, really enjoyed listening to your story.
Oh, thank you.
I cannot wait to get out on Aurora. Thank you for offering the Seabobs free for anyone that wants to come out on a day
yeah.
charter. So if you are wanting to book, I'm going to put all of the details of the Aurora and Aaron's socials and everything on the end on the show notes. And while I'm here and we're talking about socials, please do follow at the Authentic Ibiza Tribe on Instagram. I'm trying to grow that. I'll put a picture of myself and Aaron. We're currently sitting in a beautiful villa in Cap Martinet, one of ours that we rent for the summer. So look out for that. That's a new one for us this year. And please, if you're enjoying the podcast, do share it with your friends. I would love it if you could go on to Apple Podcast and rate and review. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening in once again. And thank you, Aaron, for being here and my wonderful guest. I've really, really loved having you on.
Oh, thank you very much, Sadie.
Big kiss. Take care, everybody. Bye.